The doctor is in, Dr. Keith Verbicki. Good morning, this morning in the morning.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Great to have you here, and this is a monthly series here, and man, we appreciate it. We've talked about a lot of things here, and today we want to talk about weight loss. Why are we so fat? I mean, if I can just say it like the whale in the bathtub, why has our society gotten so fat to the point that stadiums have to put wider seats in?
This is one of the most severe health crises that we've ever encountered, obesity. You know, it's estimated that 73% of Americans, 73% are either overweight or obese. 42% of Americans are obese. So, and children, you know, 25% of children, of our children, adolescents now, are pre-diabetic. A third of those have severe fatty liver. So we are killing our society, starting with our children, by what we are consuming. So in answer to your question, why are we so obese? It's because of what we are putting in our mouth. Now, this whole problem has begun in the last generation. If you look at pictures of our previous generations, they actually ate more than we did. They worked hard, but rarely would you see a picture of someone that was really obese looking at your family background. So what has changed is the introduction in our foods of fructose, corn-based fructose, sugar, and of polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are PUFAs. These are all very highly prevalent now in all the processed foods that we are consuming. Processed foods are so ubiquitous in our grocery stores. 73% of what we buy when we walk in a store are processed. And so the industry is spiking these foods with sugar, corn-based fructose sugar, and they are spiking it with these PUFAs, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, and those are causing a severe disruption of our endocrine system, primarily stimulating so much insulin and continuously insulin levels staying high. We have become highly insulin resistant, and that is why we store fat and grow tumors and get mental health illnesses. It's because of the overstimulation of insulin and our body getting insulin resistant.
Wow. And so we can even connect that dot to our mental health crisis, because there is, and this always comes back to the whole gun control thing, and you know, we see people, like over the weekend, some 20-year-old kid crawls up onto a roof with an AK, you know, 15, and then opens up on the president.
There's actually been some good studies looking at children that are over-sugared. You know, we should consume about a maximum of 12 grams of sugar a day. Most Americans are consuming 100 grams of sugar a day. Wow. Our children are the same way. What is happening with children then is that it severely influences their mental health capacities. And studies are showing that if you shut down the sugar intake in children and PUFA intake, that within 10 days of decreasing, they will increase their cognitive strength, their results on their exams in schools go up. And without a doubt, it's one of the higher risks for attention deficit disorders, which is just out of control. And the whole mental health illness problem that our society has, anxiety, depression, leading to suicide. So a direct connection with mental health problems in our country.
So if you have young kids who are struggling with depression, things like that, maybe that's a good place to start. What am I feeding my kids?
And here's the problem. You know, that we have a national breakfast program across the country. 29% of our children across the country are in it. What are they giving them for this breakfast? Mm. It's a bowl of Fruit Loops and it's a glass of orange juice. 41 grams of sugar to start the day. They should be consuming less than 12. So here you go. You know, we are causing severe insulin resistance in our children, actually starting out of the womb. And because of that, we are getting obese, obesity leading to hypertension, cardiovascular disease, increasing the risk of cancer, and as we age, insulin resistance is now known to be the cause of dementia, Alzheimer's disease. So these are all really, really potentially preventable things if we address it.
Yeah, and we as individuals have to address it and decide, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore, because I don't want to sound like a conspiracy nut, though most days I probably do. But imagine the evil circle that's going on here. You just referred to the breakfast program here. That is a federal government program. The federal government starts your kids off like that. And if the kids don't get off that kind of a diet, they develop diabetes. They develop all of the things that the doctor just referred to. And then the government comes along and says, well, we can help you out with that too. And then the pharma, you know, then it gets into the pharmaceutical thing too, where we've got a pill for that nowadays. And it just, you're caught in this evil circle, and most Americans don't have a way out.
Our government subsidies in agriculture are supporting giving more money to get the cigarettes than to vegetables. They are giving $10 billion to our soda companies right out of the national treasury. So it is so upside down. And as you know, as a consumer going to the store, the healthy vegetables, the healthy fruits that we should all be consuming are very expensive. And so as a result of unaffordability and just lack of knowledge, we are not able to many times eat the right foods that we need to stay healthy.
Well, we can start with the SNAP benefits, the things that you can and cannot buy with your SNAP benefits. I think they've lowered the restrictions on that. The number one purchase thing with SNAP benefits is soda pop.
Yeah, 29%. You drink one beverage of soda, you raise your risk of diabetes by 29% in a day. You drink two, 58% increased risk. You are drinking fructose, corn-based fructose syrup, and okay, that there's no nutritional value to that. All it does is it stimulates a lot of insulin release, and because we're eating frequently, and a lot of the fructose in that is spiked in our processed foods, we indeed become very insulin resistant. And once we do that, then we are on this slippery metabolic dysfunction slope, which goes on and on. So we have to address this and change insulin resistance.
Dr. Keith Verbicki, our guest this morning here, this is Ask the Doctor with Midwest Health Partners. So in leading up to this, I have some listener questions here. Actually, I even had one, I think before you even arrived last month, people were kind of jumping the gun. They wanted to talk about weight loss. Lots of questions about Ozempic. I would be interested in Dr. Verbicki's take on weight loss drugs such as Ozempic. Side effects, question mark, all of that.
Yeah, Ozempic has been around since 2005, actually, and it is approved initially for diabetes. How does it work? A glucagon-like peptide. Now, this is a hormone actually produced in our colon. So the human body produces GLP-1 agonist. Now, if we consume the right foods, we stimulate our own GLP-1. It sends a message to the brain that, hey, you've had enough, you're full, and then you're not asking for food in a frequent manner. So really, that's the body produces its own. Well, when indeed we are consuming all of this junk and becoming insulin resistant, we block our own GLP-1 agonist stimulation, and then we lose control of our appetite, our emotions, and we're craving, because fructose is extremely, extremely addicting to the human body. So indeed, these agents now, what they've done is we can give GLP-1 agonist, and it's a longer acting than what your body produces. And the way they work is they stimulate a hypothalamus in our brain to decrease feel full faster, decrease our appetite. And probably then the most dangerous thing about them is that they cause a slowing of the function of our GLP-1 GI tract. So the stomach emptying and decreased motility of the colon. So side effects can be nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and that's usually why patients quit taking them, is because they just can't tolerate these GI side effects. Mm. They are effective. They should, you know, they're talking about it, of course, as a weight loss drug. It does make patients lose weight if they stay on it, but they are potentially very dangerous. My personal feeling is that it can be used as a tool to help if indeed patients are willing to change their lifestyle, change these other aspects of their dietary health.
Not only rely only on the drug.
Exactly.
And I think you've already answered this question, because a lot of times I think when people do get on Ozempic, I'm just using that, there are other drugs like it, but I think the same effects, if you get off and you don't change those habits, the weight probably comes back with a vengeance.
It really does, because you're not doing really anything to your insulin resistance. And that's where the key problem is, insulin resistance. And one thing you should ask your doctor when as a part of your annual physical exam, how do I know if I'm insulin resistant? You may not actually, there are some people that are actually look thin, but inside they're fat. They have a lot of fat around.
I think that's me. People always say, "You're so thin, Jeffrey." I don't feel thin, because I always feel, yeah, he's got the tape measure here. But I do feel bloated, and I don't feel as good as I probably should.
Well, and all of this affects our mitochondria. Mitochondria are organelles in our cells that produce energy. And the PUFAs and the high insulin, they just totally destroy energy production in our cells. And then when our cells all across the body lose energy production, then we start getting sick. And that's indeed, you know, hypertension, heart disease, cancer, dementia.
Is Ozempic recommended for people over 60? Is it age appropriate?
Actually, the most common uses are now above age 50. So that's where you'll see it used the most. Most are actually adult onset diabetics, as it may be appropriate for them in their treatment to try and decrease their blood sugars and mm-hmm. keep them normal. But that's the age group that actually is the most prevalent users of it.
All right. Dr. Keith Rubicki, we are out of time, man. I could probably talk an hour with you here every month. But we'll be back again next month here, and we'll talk more. Dr. Rubicki's take on weight loss, we really appreciate that. If you ever have any questions, and again, don't misconstrue this as medical advice. Please seek the advice of your doctor, and that's a good start. What's a good way to get a hold of you, Dr. Keith Rubicki?
My office is 402-379-2322, or my email is kverbicky, V-R-B-I-C-K-Y, at mwhp.com.
Look him up, Midwest Health Partners. Thank you so much, doctor.